Welcome back here on Can't Wait. And while we had the time of our lives watching the NBA draft, the NBA finals, all the professional basketball that we could handle and more, still a little something missing. You know, it was weird. It just felt weird that Bill Simmons wasn't around to, you know, do whatever it is he does. Whether you like him, whether you hate him, it was strange not having him around. As most of you know, Bill Simmons was unceremoniously dumped from ESPN a few months ago because they just got sick of dealing with him. And while he's waiting out the end of his contract, I think he's getting paid through September. He is on radio silence. Every once in a while you see a tweet, you know, he'll make some comment on his Facebook or whatever, but for the most part there's been no Bill Simmons during what was probably the height of the NBA. I mean, the finals had the highest rating it's had in years. The draft had a ton of interest, both, you know, going in and coming out of it. And all the while, probably the most prominent media member in terms of talking about professional basketball is nowhere to be seen. So, give me your thoughts on all this, Matt Milner. What do you think? Did it just feel off not having him around?
It did. I mean, I am a Simmons apologist. I get why people don't like him or why they have issues with him, but I think that he has done more for sort of broadening the tent of sports writing than any other person in the last 10 or 15 years. And you know, it's not just this idea that you can write some, from sort of a fan's perspective, but also I think, you know, he was probably the leading force in beating against the sort of, we'll call it like the Rick Riley school of sports, where sports is this venerable institution where, you know, when you write about sports, you're not just writing about the game, you're writing about what it means and how it impacts, you know, the way we live our lives and
the prism through which our culture is refracted back at us. And it's all this really pretentious kind of nonsense.
Yeah, it is nonsense. And I think that Simmons managed to be, you know, one of the first really prominent examples of somebody who acknowledged this stuff is silly.
Yeah, it's supposed to be fun.
It's supposed to be fun. And part of why, you know, he made his mark through all of his like pop culture comparisons and dropping references to professional wrestling and Beverly Hills 90210 is because he kind of all saw it as being the same.
Yeah.
It's all just pop culture. It's all just fun. And it's fun to think about and it's fun to talk about and we get all worked up about it. But it's all just supposed to be fun. And I think that he, you know, made his columns and then when he built Grantland around his kind of aesthetic, it's turned into maybe my favorite website for sports and pop culture because it's grown so much beyond his original range of kind of interests. But he cultivated other talented young writers who cared about the same kind of things, viewed sports through the same lens, but also, and this is one thing that I think is really important, not only about Simmons but Grantland as well, it's not just fun in a way where it's supposed to be some like goofy listicle, but there's real serious analysis as well, that you understand the game, that you know, you have insight that's meaningful.
It's fun to like this stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. So I've missed him at the draft. It was fun having him actually on the broadcast the last couple of years, but you know, not being able to see his live, his draft diary, right, which is always one of the highlights of draft season.
The podcast with Chad Ford. Just the kind of stuff you get used to.
Exactly. So, I have to imagine it's been really hard for him to have to sit this out. And whatever, you know, whatever deal he struck with ESPN to sit out until September, I have to imagine that he is just killing himself that he missed one of the most interesting NBA finals in a long time, a really fun, interesting draft, some good Celtics stories to follow, all the Boogie Cousins stuff. It's tough, and I'm looking forward to whatever comes next for him, but we need him back.
As Simmons would say, the last couple of months have been totally in his wheelhouse.
Yes.
And he wasn't around to pounce on any of it. So Rusty, what was your experience with Bill Simmons? Is this a guy that you read kind of the last few years, or is this somebody you came to recently?
I mean, I think you couldn't have, if you're reading much about sports, you've got to stumble upon him. It wasn't somebody I followed a ton, and the truth is I didn't miss him in the draft this year because I was working. I teach at night on Thursday nights, and so I was following one Nick Prevenis on NBADraft.net.
That was a silly way to spend those 5 hours. Oh my god. That ended up being 6,000 words.
Wow.
Continuously spilling out of my fingers to the point where I don't know if I can still see straight, but I mean, we do it every year, and it's what we do.
And it was great. I followed along during my class. I loved it, Nick. I thought it was excellent.
I'm glad somebody was reading. I really appreciate
you
that.
You had me following along entirely. So I didn't miss Bill Simmons this year, but I do think that he's a really important part of what we do. And honestly, that's what we at Can't Wait do too, to some extent, right? Even though we call it sports and nonsense, the sports is nonsense. Yeah. And a lot of times our nonsense isn't nonsense at all. We talk about stuff that really matters to us in our personal lives.
Totally.
And so I like that kind of aspect when somebody can recognize. Too often when I listen to AM radio and they're talking about the NFL draft or the NBA draft or just sports in general, it's as if it's life or death.
Right.
And I can't stand it. It drives me crazy that they treat it this way. And so I love it that we here at Can't Wait, that there are people like Bill Simmons and others who recognize that it's all nonsense.
Yep.
And even though we call this sports and nonsense, the sports is nonsense most of the time. And I love it. I love it that we get this nonsense outlet, you know.
Yeah,
I think it's important.
It's one of those things where I don't think his influence can really be overstated. Mm-hmm. I think he might be a little overrated as a writer.
Yeah.
I think he has tics that drive me crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm not that into his, and like when NFL season gets going, I'm not a big fan of Football Simmons.
Yeah, I agree.
His
picks column.
Yeah, it's kind of rough.
Yeah, it's not good.
And, you know, there's some going through the motions that happens with anybody that's been writing consecutively since 1997. Mm-hmm. There are legit criticisms you can make about, I think he's grown as a writer, but there were criticisms you can make about how bro heavy and dude heavy and slightly misogynistic it was early on.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the way that he's built Grantland has been just magnificent. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of those guys that does recognize his strengths and weaknesses and does put people in a position to succeed. And I think a lot of the things that make him difficult to work with on a corporate level make him an excellent boss.
Yeah.
Because ultimately all he wants to do is be left alone and do his thing. Mm-hmm. And what he does as a boss is leave talented people alone to do their thing.
Yeah.
That's why 30 for 30 was such a remarkable documentary series. Mm-hmm. That's why Grantland churns out some of the best writing, not just sports, not just pop culture, but you read some of the stuff that Brian Phillips does for them is mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that Wesley Morris had a review of Ted 2 that yeah. is so much better than the movie deserves
right.
and is one of the great pop culture pieces about race and just feeling less than in a movie theater that you'll ever read.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen without Bill Simmons giving him a national platform to do it.
Yep.
And it's really kind of a crazy thing that he's been able to build over there. I think he's grown a lot as a podcaster. Mm-hmm. I think a large part of why podcasts are successful is Bill Simmons is an entry point for a lot of people into podcasts.
Yep.
Him, Corolla, gross. Mark Maron, yeah. You know, there's a handful of people that kind of shepherd a mass audience toward a medium. Mm-hmm. He was very early on with podcasts, and he was not good at it, but he worked at it and got good at it.
Yeah.
The things that he does, he makes people comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
He talks to them on their level.
Mm-hmm.
He recognizes a way in. With, you know, like you can hear a conversation with a guy like Lorne Michaels, who probably hasn't felt that comfortable talking to anybody in that kind of format. But he was able to do it with Bill Simmons, of all people.
Yeah.
And I think he's a fascinating figure. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys I feel like I can talk about more than I would want to read from.
Right.
And you cannot overstate the influence he's had. I think here's how you can boil down the Bill Simmons conversation. The site that is the most critical of him, Deadspin, would not exist without him.
Oh, yeah. That's absolutely true.
He is responsible for his greatest critic.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Right.
There's stuff that Deadspin writes about him that is completely below the belt.
Yeah.
That is completely ridiculous and, I think, unfair.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff that they've written about him that is completely fair.
Yep.
And they've had this weird obsession with him.
Mm-hmm.
Every Bill Simmons post on Deadspin gets crazy traffic, so they write about him all the time.
Yeah.
And so they'll invent things to write about him that has helped shape the narrative around him, fairly or unfairly. But I think he's in this position now where he's going to get to dictate what he wants to do. And that's not a position that a lot of people find themselves in. Do you think because we've read the same stories? He might do some stuff with HBO. He, you know, there was some talk with Turner, maybe mm-hmm. Bleacher Report. You know, there's of course the possibility that somebody he's met through, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel circles, or you know, all the very wealthy circles he now runs in. Some venture capitalist could say, "Do what you do." Mm-hmm. I love reading you, you know, because he's one of those guys that has a readership that stretches well beyond what you would think it does.
Yeah.
There are very prominent people who go to ESPN.com every single day and have fallen in love with Bill Simmons over the past 10 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. He is in a position, he can do whatever he wants. You're Bill Simmons. What do you do, Matt Milner?
You know, I think that he does. I would assume that he'll want to be on TV still, because I think that he did sort of fall in love with that.
That's not the thing he's good at yet.
Not yet, but I think that he'll get there. And I do think there were moments. But I think that he still likes that platform.
Totally. Because that's what lets you be a celebrity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll be real about that. I do think that obviously he's going to want to be able to have, a print outreach, because that's first and foremost how he came up. And I think he'll always want to be able to write.
That's interesting, though, because he loves writing mm-hmm. now, but he's done less and less of it
yeah.
as he's podcasted and been on TV more, because writing is solitary and yeah. writing is very hard.
Yeah.
Podcasting is easy.
Yeah.
And talking to people's fun. Mm-hmm. I think there's an analogous situation with Dan Le Batard. Dan Le Batard is a brilliant writer.
Yeah.
He doesn't like it.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it that much anymore.
Yeah.
He's in Miami having fun on the radio every day.
Right. Hanging out with his dad.
God,
and
the
just,
greatest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do feel like Bill Simmons is going to still want to write.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how badly he wants to do that, because he brags about how long The Book of Basketball is mm-hmm. and how hard that was. But man, is it really worth it to write books anymore?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's a really good, it's a good point. And I think that he would be best suited for a situation where, first of all, you can take advantage of his talent evaluation skills.
Yes.
In the sense that, you know, when he built Grantland, the writers, it was interesting because the first wave of Grantland, the concept was that most of the writers were really famous writers.
Yes.
You know, your Klostermans, your Malcolm Gladwells, you know, people who were very well-known public intellectuals.
I think that was to drive traffic initially.
Yeah. But I also think that one thing that they realized was that they needed to be able to have young, hungry writers who could actually generate a lot of content, but also kind of create a new voice for Grantland, rather than just having it be kind of the depository for where you would read whatever Chuck Klosterman wrote every 3 weeks or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, he managed to pick out people who did not have prominent backgrounds and have turned into exceptional.
And pay them.
And pay them. Pay them and give them freedom. And now, you know, we talk about missing Simmons, but the one thing that has bridged the gap for me is Zach Lowe, who is kind of his heir apparent in a lot of ways.
Doubled his workload.
Much more serious heavy lifting in terms of the basketball analysis. But it's really clear when you listen to Zach's podcast just how much respect and admiration and just affection that Zach Lowe has for Simmons, and recognizes that Simmons was the guy who made him, basically. Because mm-hmm. every single Lowe Post podcast, he will make references to Simmons. Mm-hmm. And not in just like a passing way, but in acknowledging that he feels some obligation to like pick up some part of the torch and keep carrying it on from him.
Yep.
So anyway, I would love to see him in an environment where he's got a media platform where he can cultivate other young writers. Maybe it's some of the Grantland folks, maybe it's new people, but continue to use that ability to bring out the best in other people. I don't need a Simmons column every week.
Right.
But I do need his voice guiding other young writers, and I'd like to be able to just, when notable things happen that are in his wheelhouse, as you said, you want him to have an outlet to be able to express it, whether it's, you know, through a 3,000 word column or through a 2-hour long podcast, whatever it is, he has interesting things to say. I just want to hear what they are.
And producing, right? I mean, just yeah. coming up with stuff and helping to make more better, interesting content. To me, I mean, if I were in his position, I'm not a big Turner guy, but I love HBO. I love what the John Oliver show. We've talked about it just in our show. Like, what's the gold standard for talking right now about stuff? And it's John Oliver. I mean, he's just it. Yep. And if you've got a kind of platform like HBO where they'll let you do what you want, that's so cool. Like, I love the 30 for 30 series. I love watching those. Some of those documentaries are the most powerful documentaries I've seen. The one about fantasy baseball and its inception is the funniest documentary I've ever seen. I just think that there's got to be a way that HBO can figure that out and allow him this really great, powerful means of talking to people and getting the word out there. And so that's, if I were him, I'd find that. I'd find it. And I'd maybe, I don't know how much HBO is doing, like, with writing and digitally online and online content in that manner, but it seems like a good outlet for them to get into.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, he's been linked to HBO, and he said multiple times that 30 for 30 was inspired in large part by a lot of the kinds of documentaries HBO would do. Mm-hmm. And yeah. why doesn't ESPN, with its infinite resources, try to match it? And so HBO was the template in a lot of ways for what he was doing, because HBO's been doing these documentaries forever.
Yes,
they're
that's
really
right.
good at it.
They're really good
and
at
so
it.
And so if you were to take Simmons, who has more ideas and has clearly shown an ability to connect with Hollywood-level directors to bring it, you know, HBO already has these resources. Simmons has these resources. You bring it together, it makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. You bring up something interesting with the digital platform, because HBO has, you know, these last couple months especially, they've been in a big show about, like, HBO Now and HBO Go and trying to figure out a way to put their stuff in front of people on their computers, on their iPads. And so if there was a way that they were able to have, like, an HBO digital realm where they weren't just shepherding the best of TV and the best of movies, you know, where they make these miniseries now where Colin Farrell is the star and they have these movies that are basically Hollywood level movies with Steven Soderbergh directing and Julia Roberts starring. Mm-hmm. And so if they were able to bring in a guy like Bill Simmons, who is one of a handful of people who can sell writing on his name alone,
yep.
and shepherd in an HBO level of discourse in the written word, I feel like that's a conversation they're having. I don't know if it's something they go for, but they do want to increase their digital footprint. And whether or not you like Bill Simmons, he's the most successful digital writer ever. Mm-hmm. He is the digital age equivalent to a... who would it be? Like a Peter Gammons or or, you know, just these sports writers that were, like, larger than life. Mm-hmm. But he did it, you know, without any, you know, previously established platform. He did it on AOL, you know? So he's the guy that has shown the ability to drive traffic online. Yeah. He's a guy you talk to about that. So there's a lot to be said about being able to build your own brand name as a guy on the internet. The thing about the internet is, for so many people, it was the collapse of capitalism. You know, bands don't make money anymore. Mm-hmm. And when the internet came of age, you were able to get so much content for free, and only a handful of people were able to navigate a way to turn it into profit for themselves. I don't know if Bill Simmons is Bill Simmons without ESPN, but ESPN isn't ESPN without Bill Simmons, because
he was
driving so much traffic to them in that nascent era when it was kind of neck and neck. What sports website were people going to go to?
Yeah.
You know, Yahoo and AOL and everybody.
Sports Illustrated?
Yeah, SI was a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why SI is probably going to go out of business soon,
yeah.
because they just did not get on the web soon enough.
Yeah.
The reason why ESPN is still everybody's first hit when they go to sports is because they wanted to read Bill Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. It's crazy. And so we're going to enter this new phase of what sports media is and what it could be. And he's going to direct a lot of that conversation, because whether or not you like his writing, he has shown the ability to drive eyeballs to wherever he is. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully he might drive an eyeball or two to kxci.org/program/can't wait. You know, if you ever want to come on, Bill Simmons, we'd love to talk to you about all this. You want to break your radio silence? You have an open invitation here.
Anytime.
On Can't Wait.
Sunday mornings.
Yeah, come find us.